Hey, what's going on, Outlander fans? Welcome back to Bannex Bonnets and Kilts. I'm your host, Jenny Coco Cure. This is episode 14 of Bannex Bonnets and Kilts, and this week we're going to be recapping the finale of Outlander season 3, entitled The Eye of the Storm. This episode was directed by Matthew B. Roberts and written by Matthew B. Roberts and Tony Grafia. So Matthew B. Roberts performed double duty this episode, writing and directing, or co-writing rather, with Tony Grafia. So he, okay, I'm sorry. That is my cat. My cat is destroying things in my room while I am trying to talk. Pepper! Oh, God. Okay, so, yeah, okay, we're going to leave that in because it's funny. Okay, Eye of the Storm, directed by Matthew B. Roberts and written by Matthew B. Roberts and Tony Grafia. They share duty and writing, so, yeah, that's great. Anyway, general thoughts about the episode. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I will admit that there were a couple of things when I gave it the first watch that had me a little bit unimpressed. Like, I thought that some of the stuff, especially dealing with the whole, Claire finding Ian thing and my cat. I will be back, guys. All right, guys, we're back. Quick intermission there with my cat. Had to put him out of the room. He just wanted to go a little ballistic there right when I started recording. He was taking a nice, quiet little nap in the corner. And then I started recording, and all of a sudden he wants to jump on things and knock them over and then start crying to get out. So guess what? I put him out so that he can go play and do whatever he wants to do while I try to record peacefully, hopefully. Let's see if we can do this. All right. Gosh, do I need to start over? No, I don't. Okay. We've already talked about that this being the Eye of the Storm, the finale of Outlander. I was talking about how I felt that some of the scenes weren't as great as I thought they could have been. Felt a little rushed. Some of it felt a little rushed. All of the earlier, the first half of the episode was just so rushed. And I can't be the only one that thinks that. It's like they just rushed through so much stuff. The whole thing with, well, okay, we'll get to it when I do my recap. Okay. All right. This week we didn't have a title card. Not really. We just had this scene in the beginning of the episode where Claire is underwater. She is floating underwater. She looks like she has she's wrapped in ropes and she's unconscious. Her eyes are closed. Narrator Claire is narrating about how she was dead and she had no more hate, no more anger, no more fear, all of this stuff. No, well, not hate, but rage and no more fear. And that she just felt blissful in this state. And she's floating down in the depths of the ocean, I guess. And her hair is billowing at all around her. So we are led to believe that Claire has drowned. That's what it looks like. And then we flash back in time, apparently, to before this drowning incident happens, where she's still in the carriage from where we left off last week when Jamie was arrested by the Redcoats and Captain Leonard, and Claire is now riding alone in the stagecoach through the jungle. And they, at one point, they have to stop the stagecoach. Claire doesn't know. She can't see why they're stopping. She's like, why are we stopping? And then all of a sudden we see these slaves with all these torches walking through the jungle, and they're humming and they're chanting, and they're walking slowly past, and Claire sees them and just kind of observes. And then after they passed and the stagecoach is able to continue forward, finally they get to the estate where Galus lives. And Claire gets out of the stagecoach. She asks the driver, where are the slave quarters? And he tells her, just go down this path. So she goes, she tells him to wait for her. If she doesn't come back, to come to the main house and ask about her. So then she goes to the slave quarters. She's whispering Ian's name, Ian. She goes to each one of the little shacks, Ian, Ian. She's trying to find him. And then she sees a dog that is like scratching at this pile of dead bamboo leaves that seems to be covering something up. She goes over and sees that there are some legs sticking out from under these old bambo leaves, and she shooes the dog away. She sees that the legs are white. She's nervous. She's going, oh God, you know, of course, hoping that this isn't Ian. When she moves the leaves out of the way, she notices that it is not Ian. However, right as she's noticing this, she is grabbed from behind by Hercules, Galus's huge manservant. And then we flash to a scene of Ian, young Ian. He's being questioned by Galus in her bedroom again, talking about, you haven't told me what they wanted, you know, with the jewels yet, and I need to know. And Ian is like, I've already told you they wanted the jewels for a debt. And Galus was like, I don't believe you. Claire wanted the jewels. She wanted it for something else. And Ian is like, look, I done told you, I don't know how many times, they wanted it for a debt. I'm getting tired of you blathering at me about it. And he goes after her, but then he's grabbed up by the other servants that are standing there. And then one of the maid servants comes in and says to Galus that Hercules had found someone. And Galus tells the people to take Ian away. So they take Ian away, and then Hercules brings Claire in. And Claire is like, I'm sorry, Galus, I got lost. My manservant put me off at the end of the road, and I couldn't find your house. And I think Hercules walks over to Galus and whispers something to her, and then moves over to stand in the corner. So Claire is like, oh shit, she probably told him, or he probably told her I was down there peeping around the slave quarters. But anyway, Galus stares at her at first, you know, this real kind of cold stare. And Claire's just standing there, kind of waiting, I guess, to see if Galus is going to make anything of her visit. And then Galus just kind of, you know, switches back into friendly Galus mode, talking about, don't worry, you can visit me anytime, you know, but what brings you here? And Claire was like, well, Jamie has been arrested. And Galus is like, for what? And Claire says, well, they're accusing him of murder, but of course he's innocent. And now they're after me. So Gaius was like, well, you must be exhausted. You need to just take a load off, girl. You know? So, you know, Gaius is playing nice, you know, for now. But obviously, you know, both of them are, you know, faking it at the moment. So then we switch to Jamie and Captain Leonard. They have Jamie and Irons. Jamie is kind of joking that it's a shame you didn't get lost and make it to Havana instead of coming this way. And Captain Leonard was like, yeah, you got jokes, okay. But guess what? We here now, and now we finna get ready to take your ass to trial. But just as Captain Leonard was feeling all smug about capturing Red Jamie, or James Fraser, I don't know if he knows him as Red Jamie, but anyway, after he's, you know, told Jamie, you know, yeah, well, you can joke all you want, we got you now. He is approached by some other redcoats, and they say that they are going to take Jamie into custody, into their custody. And Captain Leonard is white, under whose orders? Why? You know.
And then we switched to Lord John Grey and his office. Now, let me tell you, I love this scene. This scene was so good. If there's any scenes in this episode that stand out to me, it is this scene with Lord John dressing the hell down to Captain Leonard. I loved every moment of it. Anyway, starts out with Lord John standing there. Jamie is sitting in a chair off to the side while Lord John is behind his desk, and Captain Leonard is standing before Lord John saying, Lord John, no, Your Excellency, because of course he's the governor, Your Excellency, you will have to remand this man back into my custody because I have a warrant for his arrest. He's wanted in Scotland. Okay, and Lord John is like, oh, you have a warrant. May I see it? And Captain Leonard is like, oh, no, I don't have it in my possession. Oh, Lord John says, oh, you don't have a warrant. Okay, so then what do you have to base your taking this man into your custody? And Captain Leonard was like, well, oh, but before Lord John even goes into that, he says, Lieutenant Leonard, Captain Leonard, you'll have to excuse me. I'm unfamiliar with the way that the Navy gives away titles to folks who haven't earned them. Because, you know, in the Army, we don't roll like that. You have to earn your titles with us. But anyway, you were saying it was priceless. It was priceless. Of course, I am paraphrasing, as I am prone to do, but this is basically what he's saying to the man. And I loved it. Just shade, so much shade. It was just delicious. So anyway, Captain Leonard is standing in front of Lord John, like, you know, well, I don't have a warrant. And then Captain and Lord John was like, well, then what do you have? And Captain Leonard was like, the word of my man who saw him in Scotland doing the things that he's accused of doing. So then Lord John was like, oh, the word of your man. Okay, so then I guess that means that your man signed an affidavit that was, you know, witnessed by a magistrate. Let me see that then. And Captain Leonard was like, nah, I don't have that either, but... And Lord John was like, oh, you don't have a warrant or an affidavit. Yeah, you taking somebody into your custody like you got it like that. And Captain Leonard was like, well, I am the captain or the lieutenant of the Porpoise. And under the Articles of War, I am satisfied that the information that I have received is accurate. And I have every right to take this man into custody. Like he said, under the Articles of War. And Lord John was like, yeah, if you had captured him at sea, but your demand or your command ends at the water's edge. You are now in my house, and this is where I run shit. So I'm saying, if you don't have the warrant or the affidavit, you need to get to stepping. You don't have any authority here. Meanwhile, Jamie's sitting over in the corner like, all right then. Oh my God, I loved every moment of it. Long story short, Captain Leonard's face was on the floor. He had to leave. And Jamie, of course, had to stand up and say, well, I guess I owe you another favor because you just saved my life again. And Lord John was like, well, you know, we've saved each other's lives many times. So, you know, it's pretty even. We good. We good. So then Jamie says, well, I thank you again, John, but I got to go get my wife. And John is like, well, be careful, be safe, and I'll see you some other time. So they just parted ways, you know. And of course, Lord John is looking after him as he leaves all dreamily. He's so in love. But I just loved this scene. It was so, it was my favorite. I must say, before I move on, that Lord John is becoming one of my favorite characters. He really is. He's just great. The actor who plays him, I can't think of his name right now, but he is brilliant. He's just a great actor. I love him. I absolutely love the character much more than I did when I was reading the books. You know, because I just remember everybody talking so much about Lord John from the books. He had his own little spin-off series that I've never read. And people love Lord John from the books. I'm not saying I didn't like him. I did like him in the books, but I just didn't get that connection that so many other people did. And in the show, I'm feeling it. This actor is making me feel it. So I'll give him the credit for that. Because before the show, I just wasn't feeling Lord John like that. Now I do. So now I'm getting it. Hopefully, maybe Lord John will get his own little spin-off novella. You know, like Walking Dead has Fear the Walking Dead. Wouldn't it be cool if Stars had a little Lord John, like little short series, like maybe 30-minute episodes and stuff? Wouldn't that be cool? I would watch that shit. I know y'all would too. Anyway, let me stop gushing. So then we switch to Galus's house again. Claire and Galus are sitting down to tea. Apparently not the truth tea, because Gillis is questioning Claire about a lot of things, and she doesn't believe anything that Claire is saying. So apparently she did not give Claire the same tea she'd given Ian prior last week, you know, that had him compelled to tell the truth. 'Cause Claire had explained to her that, you know, she and Jamie ended up in Jamaica, you know, basically had told Claire the whole, I mean, told Gillis the whole story. And Claire, I mean, Glalis was like, okay, well, you're leaving one part out. Why are you here? And Claire was like, I just told you why I'm here. And Glalis was like, no, you're not telling me everything, because you, 25 years ago, you dropped out of the sky and we found each other. And I've never met another traveler other than you. You know, and you found me then, and now here you are again on my doorstep. And what is it that keeps dragging, bringing us together? And Claire's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And Galus is like, why are you doing everything you can to stop me? She says, I believe now that you're the one that poisoned Colin's mind against Dougal and made Colin not want to, you know, participate in the uprising. And I think that, you know, I was blinded by your friendship before. I didn't realize that you were trying to stop me, but I see it now. So Claire's looking at this woman now like, okay, she's crazy. So she's like, you know what, Claire? She's like, I'm out. I'll see you later. So Claire gets up to try to leave. Galus tells her manservant Hercules to stop her. And Claire's like, what is going on here? I don't understand. And Galus is like, Galus, what does Galus say at that point? I think basically Galus is just telling Claire that she believes that she's been here all these 20 some years, and that she's been working against Galus to stop her from putting a Scot on the throne. And Clara's like, I haven't even been here for the last 20 years. I left right after Culloden, going back to 1948. Galus was like, that's another lie. And Claire was like, no, it's not. I left because we knew it was going to happen, that the war, that Culloden was going to happen, and that the whole slaughtering of all the Scots in the Highlands was going to be done. So I left. And Galus was like, nope, even war wouldn't have let you leave your husband. I don't believe that. And Claire was like, but I was pregnant. And Galus said, pregnant. And Claire's like, yes, I was pregnant. I went back to 1948 to have my daughter so that she would be safe. And Galus still was like, I don't believe you. And she told Hercules, take her. You can do what you want with her. And Claire was like, wait, I have proof. So Claire takes her pictures out of her pocket and hands them to Galus. Because if you remember last week, you know, Jamie was always carrying the pictures with him before he was taken by the Redcoats or taken by Captain Leonard, but he had given them to Claire for safekeeping right before he was taken into custody. So now Claire has them in her possession. So she took them out of her pocket and handed them to Galus to prove that she has a daughter, that she was in 1948, because of course, in some of the photos, Claire is standing there in her, you know, 1940s and 50s clothes with Brianna. And Brianna is, of course, standing there in her modern clothes as a little girl and as a teenager and as a young woman. And Galus is looking through all these pictures, and then it clicks to her. a 200-year-old baby, a baby that was conceived in the 1800s and born in the 1700s and then born in the 21st century. So that is the 200-year-old baby. And it clicks to Galus that this is part of the prophecy. So when she turns her back with the pictures in her hand, she sneaks one and sticks it in her bosom, Galus does, and then gives Claire the other pictures and tells Claire, okay, well, that makes sense now. I believe you. That's an interesting story. Look, you can stay here as long as you want. You know, my home is your home, essentially, is what Galus is telling Claire. Because now Galus has what she wants. She knows that Brianna, or she believes that Brianna, is the 200-year-old baby that she's going to have to go to the future and kill. So a little later, Claire is in the house. She's kind of still looking around, seeing what she can find. She's, you know, going from room to room, trying to see if she can find anything about Ian. Then she looks out a window after she hears a noise, and she sees one of the slaves carrying a person over a shoulder. The person is tied up and gagged. And Claire looks real hard and sees that it is Ian. She tries to get out into the yard where they are. She can't open the doors. They're all locked. Then she sees this one door where it appears somebody is at it trying to get in. And Claire grabs a heavy candlestick and then stands off to the side like she's going to knock the shit out of whoever is getting ready to come in. And when they come in, she swings, but thankfully she misses because it turns out to be Jamie. She tells Jamie that she saw Ian, and they rush out of the door that he just came in. And Claire shows them the way that the servants had taken Ian. They rush down that way, and they travel down this path through the jungle until they get to this place where they see a fire with slaves dancing around it, some of them wearing masks. They're all chanting, singing, performing some sort of ritualistic chant and dance. Claire and Jamie hide in the bushes. They don't want to be seen. They're just kind of observing all this. So as Jamie and Claire are watching the slaves from the bushes doing their ritualistic dance and chant, Claire is reminded, as she's watching some of the women spinning and dancing around the fire with their torches, she's reminded of the women on the hill at Craig na Dun when she was there with Frank on her honeymoon, and they watched the women do the ritualistic dance. She's reminded of that scene. It reminded her of that same kind of dancing. But suddenly, as they're in the bushes, they are caught. They are captured by some of the slaves that see them hiding there. And so they're pushed out of the bushes. And when they are discovered by the rest of the slaves, suddenly Yi Tin Cho just comes out of the crowd, and he's like, "Hey, Jamie," you know. And then Yi Tin Cho told the man with the alligator on his head that Jamie and Claire were with him, so they allowed that. So Yi Tin Cho goes over to them, and Jamie and Claire was like, "What are you doing here?" And Yi Tin Cho says, "I'm here with Margaret." And he looks over, and we see Margaret over there talking to one of the slave women. And he says these people had heard of Margaret's skills and asked her to come here, and I came with her. And he's smiling. He's all happy. He said, like, "We want to be together." He says, "After tonight, we're going to leave here and we're going to Martinique. We're going to start a life together there. You know, we want to be with each other." But then Jamie asks him, "Has he seen Ian?" And Yi Tin Cho says, "No, he has not." And then Claire says, "Well, maybe Margaret has seen him." So they go over to talk to Margaret. So Claire, you know, says to Margaret, "You look happier. You look happy." And Margaret says, "Yes." Well, she just smiles, really. And then Yi Tin Cho asks her, does she know where Mrs. Abernathy might be? Because we know that Margaret and Archibald were staying with Galus. So right before Margaret can answer, she looks at Jamie, and this strange look comes over her face. And she goes to him and she takes his hand. And when she touches his hand, she goes into one of those little trances, and she starts to see, I guess, something. And she says, "I see you in an orchard sown with blood, and I see a rabbit." So Jamie starts like, wait a minute. And then he has a flashback of when he was on the battlefield of Culloden, and he's lying there amongst all the dead bodies, and he looks over and he sees that rabbit. So I'm like, okay. Then she takes Claire's hand and she says, "I see a songbird on the windowsill, and you look at it when you feel sorrowful. But when he sings, you hear him." She's looking at Jamie. I'm like, okay. Then she takes both their hands and she blinks and she looks at Jamie and she says, "I knew it was you, my father." And her voice changes. It's like she's speaking for someone else. And she says to him, "I love you." Then she looks at Claire and kisses her on the cheek. "You too, mama." And right at that point, I'm like, holy fuck, she's talking for Brianna. She's channeling Brianna. Then her eyes change slightly and she starts to shake. And she says, "Oh no, oh my God, no, help me. The monster, help me." And they're like, her and Jamie and Claire are freaking out. They're like, what are you talking about? And then she goes, a band away. It's really freaky. She's just all over the place. At first she's like seeing Jamie and Claire's ways, I guess, of thinking of each other. I don't know. I'm still confused about the whole rabbit thing. The bird thing, I guess I get in a way, because Claire was like, she told Jamie that when she saw the bird, she thought of Jamie. But I don't recall Jamie saying anything about the rabbit reminding him of Claire. So I'm still confused about that whole thing. Maybe one of the other podcasters who's more into this deep meaning shit can describe that better. But I don't know anything about any of that. It's just, it is what it is. But then when she starts going the whole a band away, Claire's like, "Yes, you told me about that before. What is it? What is a band away?" And Claire says, "A band away is the cave, right?" And then Margaret kind of backs up and she says, "The monster is coming." And right then her brother shows up with a knife, talking about, "You heathen, you took my sister." He's talking to Yi Tin Cho. So Yi Tin Cho says to Archibald, "You're not welcome here." And then he says, "Fine, then I'll take my sister with me and we'll go." So he grabs Margaret's arm and tries to drag her away. So when he manages to get her a little ways away, he says to her, Archibald says to Margaret, "Have you forgotten about our patron, Mistress Abernathy? She's paying us money for you to, you know, help her." And Jamie overhears him say, "Mistress Abernathy." And he grabs him and says, "What do you know about Mistress Abernathy?" And Archibald is like, "I don't know what you're talking about." It says, "Your patron has my nephew in." And Archibald is like, "I don't know anything about your nephew. I just know about her wanting to find out more about the prophecy and the 200-year-old baby." And when Claire overhears him say 200-year-old baby, that strikes up the conversation she had with Galus earlier. So, you know, this all conveniently falls into place, of course, with all the overhearing and things. So And what's really funny about this one too, is that he recites the whole prophecy to Jamie so conveniently. Talks about the death of the 200-year-old baby has to happen before the king can return to the throne of Scotland. I'm like, oh, that's just great. So now they know the whole story. Claire overhears this. Her eyes bug out. Oh my gosh, she's talking about Brianna. Meanwhile, the slaves are in the background still doing their ritualistic dance, and they've taken a chicken out at this point, dancing around with the poor chicken. And you know, it's never good when you see a chicken at one of these things. Never good. Never good. So while at this point, there's three important things going on at the same time. You've got Claire and Jamie off to the side, going through the pictures, figuring out that Gillis is thinking of Brianna as a 200-year-old baby that she has to kill in order for the king of Scotland to return to the throne. You've got the slaves doing their ritualistic dance with the chicken, and you know the chicken's in trouble. Then you have Yi-Ting Cho and Margaret and Archibald having a standoff because Archibald is threatening Margaret now with a stick, saying, if you don't come with me, I'm going to beat you with this stick. And Yi-Ting Cho is like, no, you're not. You know, she's going to stay with me. You don't deserve for this woman to be in your life. I know what you've been doing to her. And it stops here and now. And Margaret is like, you've been having me tell these fortunes with riddles, and I'm not doing it anymore. I'm done. So ritualistic dance going on. Jamie and Claire, you know, having this discussion about, you know, Gaelis and Brianna, and Yi-Ting Cho and Archibald getting ready to get down. So Archibald hauls off with his stick, hits Margaret with it. Mr. Willoughby snatches it from him, grabs him. In the background with the ritualistic dancing, a woman grabs a chicken. One of the slave women grabs a chicken, bites his neck, bleeds the chicken into a bowl. The guy with the alligator on his head, the alligator hat on, drinks some of it. That's great. Yeah. Then Mr. Willoughby is holding Archibald. I apologize for keep calling him that. I guess it rolls off the tongue so much better. And, you know, you start to understand why Jamie called him that, because it just rolls off the tongue. It's fucked up. I'm sorry. Yi-Ting Cho. Okay. Yi-Ting Cho is holding Archibald by the head, suddenly twists his neck and breaks it and drops him to the ground. As soon as he drops him to the ground, he goes over to Margaret, make sure she's okay. The slaves, who at this point had been watching the fight between Mr. Willoughby and Archibald, leap onto Archibald and start stabbing him repeatedly. Like, oh my God, I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, I guess maybe because they saw him hit Margaret. At first I'm confused, why are they stabbing him? But I think maybe they did it because they saw him attack Margaret, and they like Margaret, and they like Yi-Ting Cho. So to see this man come into their inner sanctum causing havoc, he got to go. So yeah, Yi-Ting Cho had already broke his neck, but let's finish him off for good measure. So they were just all over him, stabbing him. One of them take his wig off and put it on his head. I'm like, okay, I guess that's a trophy, I'm assuming. Okay, so Archibald's out of here. He's gone. He's dead. Claire and Jamie at this point know that they now have to go to Gaelis's house to find Ian and also to deal with Gaelis, because Claire has told Jamie also during all of this that Abandaway, which Margaret had mentioned, is another portal, just like Craig Nadun. She explains to Jamie that Gillis intends to go back in time to, not back in time, forward in time, back to 1968, where Brianna is, in order to kill her, because she's supposed to die as a 200-year-old baby that needs to die in order for the king to return to the throne, the Scottish king. So Jamie grabs Claire. They start asking around with the slaves. A band away. Do you know where it is? They finally come across one who tells them, yes, go that way and you'll find it. And Jamie's like, take us there. And the slave was like, no, I ain't going. Look, the slave was like, a band away is dangerous. Of course, he's not saying it like this, but he essentially says to them, it's dangerous. If the boy is there, he's dead. If you go, you're going to die too. So no, I'm not going. So Jamie, you know, angrily snatches the torch from the guy. All right, fine, you know. So he'll just go with Claire himself. So they head on that way. And before Jamie goes through the bushes, though, he looks over to see what's happening and sees that the slaves have now picked up Archibald, carrying his dead body up in the air. I don't know what they plan to do with it. Probably, I don't know, cut it to pieces. Who knows? Anyway, who cares? No one likes Archibald anyway. So he's done. So then he follows Claire into the bush, headed for the cave, a band away. So Jamie and Claire go through this heavily wooded area until they find the cave opening. They go into the cave. They hear this humming noise. And Claire says to him, I hear the hum. Well, she hears it. And of course, the audience can hear it. But it's understood that Jamie and anyone who is not connected to this magic that allows you to travel through the stones cannot hear it. So Claire tells Jamie, I hear the hum. She says, Jamie, if it takes me, I can't come back. I don't think I'll be able to come back. And Jamie says, if anything happens to me, you have to go through and stop her from getting to Brianna. He says, we lost faith. We're not going to lose Brianna too. So they take a moment out of this incredibly tense time to kiss and have their little romantic moment. And then they keep going until they get through and they see Galus. She's putting together a circle with Brianna's picture that she had stolen in the middle. And she's like creating this like circle on the ground with dirt or sand or something. And the jewels, I think, are in there as well. And she's got Ian tied up behind her because he has to be the sacrifice. Anyway, when Jamie and Claire see Galus with Ian, Jamie immediately charges forward like he's getting ready to stab Galus. He's got a knife. And Galus says to him, stop right there, Fox. You know, and of course, Hercules is right there with a gun and points it directly at Jamie. And she says, persistent, Hercules will put a bullet right in your head. So Jamie stands there. He freezes. He drops the knife. Galus says, I'm only sparing you because Claire is fond of you. You know, and so then Galus turns and starts pouring stuff all over Ian. Maybe it's liquor, which of course would serve as a flammable substance. Because I think her plan is to light Ian on fire. So Ian starts screaming and Claire is like, don't, Galus, don't. Hercules is distracted. He looks over to see, you know, the whole thing going on with Ian. Jamie takes this opportunity to tackle Hercules. Now, of course, Hercules is huge. Jamie's big, but Hercules is enormous. So Jamie tackling Hercules didn't go so well because, of course, eventually Hercules flips Jamie over and starts to choke the shit out of him. So, you know, they're wrestling, but, you know, Jamie is on a losing end of this one. And, you know, they're struggling and Claire is, she keeps her eye on Jamie and Hercules as they're wrestling and going on over there. But she's trying to also sneak and get closer to Galus so that she can stop her from killing Ian. So Galus picks up a torch and tries to, you know, hold Claire off and says, you owe me a life, Claire. You know, a life for a life. You know, she says, I had to give up my baby. So you got to give up yours too. So Claire is like, Ian is just a boy. And Galus is like, I'm not talking about him. He's just, you know, the sacrifice for me to get through the portal. I'm talking about Brianna. So, you know, they're, you know, kind of standing off in front of each other. And Galus is like, it's for the greater good. And the humming noise is getting louder. And Claire looks over at this pool that is directly in front of them. And it's kind of glowing. And the humming appears to be coming from that. So that's when she realizes that that is the portal. The portal is actually this pool of water that's inside the cave. So Galus is, you know, rambling on, talking about how the cause, you know, is for the greater good. You know, she gave up her child for the cause. You have to give up yours as well. And talking about we are the chosen. We are meant to change history. And Claire is just waiting for her opportunity. You know, she's looking and spying over at Jamie's and Hercules, and Jamie is trying to get to this knife that he's dropped, but Hercules is just kind of knocking him around like a rag doll. At one point, Claire just has had enough of this whole crap that Gillis is spewing, and she just charges her and knocks her down. When that happens, Jamie knocks Hercules down, I think. I think he manages to get Hercules knocked down. And then he manages to get to the knife. And then he holds it to Hercules' neck, but he does not stab him. He just holds the knife to his neck. And Hercules just stays still, you know, because he ain't crazy. He doesn't want to die. And then Claire grabs a machete that apparently Galus has brought with her, and she picks it up. And when Galus gets up off the floor, she looks at the pool like she's getting ready to dive in. And she said, this is God's will. And as she's getting ready to move towards the pool, Claire takes the machete, swings it, and catches Gilly right in the throat. I keep saying Gilly. Gilly is the name of a Game of Thrones character, not Gilly, Galus, sorry. But anyway, Claire swings and hits Galus right in the throat, taking her out. She falls to the ground. When we look at her, her head is at a very awkward angle and almost severed from her neck, and she is gone. Out of here. And Jamie backs up from Hercules, and Hercules stands, and Jamie says, get out of here, you're free. Hercules is like, cool, I'm out. He goes. Because Hercules was like, I didn't want to do none of this shit. No way. That bitch, you know, I don't know, man. She was giving me some pussy. I don't know. I don't know what it was that made Hercules. I don't know. I mean, he was a slave. I mean, he's a big dude, but he was still a slave. Now, I'm going to just say the difference between Hercules in the book and Hercules in the show. Hercules in the book was under some sort of sedation. He was drugged. Galus was giving him some sort of poison that made him into some sort of a walking zombie. And she was able to control him as a result of that. In the show, he was just doing it because I guess he was just a servant. Hey, this is my mistress. I'm supposed to do what she tells me to do. So the minute that Jamie tells him, or he sees she's dead, and then Jamie goes, okay, she's dead. You're free. He's like, cool. I'm out. Peace, y'all. And he's gone. So I think I like that version better. So that was interesting. So Jamie goes over to cut Ian out of his ropes. Claire, she's kind of like in a trance. She's staring at Galus's body, and she's looking at the way her head, like I said, is nearly severed from her body. So then Claire is distracted again by the loud humming coming from the pool. She's just in this shock state. She's almost like, well, she is shocked, you know, or in shock. And as she's hearing the sound from the pool getting louder and louder,
She kind of starts walking slowly towards it, staring at it. You know, Jamie looks at her and he's like, Claire, he's calling her. She's not paying attention. Then he takes her hand and kind of snaps her out of it. And he says, let's get out of here. Ian is picking up all the jewels off the floor. He ain't crazy. Yeah, let's not leave the jewels behind. So they get out of there. So when they get outside of the cave, you know, Ian, still shaken up, turns and looks at Jamie and says, I knew you'd find me, Uncle Jamie, but you left it a bit late. And Jamie's like, I'm sorry. They hug it out. You know, he says, you're okay now, though. And they kind of laugh at each other. And then he looks, and Jamie looks over and sees that Claire is standing there shaking. She still has the bloody machete in her hand. Her hand is trembling. And then she has a flashback to when she was back in 1940-something, 60-something, whatever year it was. And it was that time when Joe Abernathy had received these bones from a friend that wanted him to examine them. To let him know what the cause of death was. These bones had been found in a cave in the West Indies, and Joe had been sent them because he was an expert in this field, and he was to determine the cause of death. And he was saying the bones are of a woman, late 40s, Caucasian. Claire was the one that had said that it was a woman that had been killed. And Joe Abernathy said, how do you know she was murdered? But after he examines the vertebrae, he realizes, yes, it looks like someone tried to cut this woman's head clear off. Turns out those bones were Galus's bones. So that's kind of a freak show. Claire is shocked, by remembering and then putting together that that's what this was. So Jamie goes over to her. He takes the machete out of her hand, tosses it aside. It's okay. He hugs her. She's crying. And he's explaining to her, we're going to get our crew together and we're going to set sail back to Scotland. It's going to be okay. And he says, but first I have to hold both of you. So he takes Ian too and just holds both of them in his arms, and the music swells and the camera pans up to the sky looking down at them as Jamie is holding his woman and his nephew in his arms. And it's really a nice scene. So in the next scene, we see a far off shot of the Artemis. It is set sail. Back on its way to Scotland, and inside we see that Jamie and Claire are now just kind of chilling. Claire is lying down. Jamie has a bowl of water and is sitting at a table about to give himself a shave. And Claire says, it was really nice of Lord John to use his influence to get the warrant withdrawn on you. And then Jamie says, yes, it'll be nice to go back to Scotland. And as soon as I get there, I'm taking Ian right to Jenny. And Claire was like, well, after all this adventure, you know, Ian's not going to want to go back. Jamie says, I don't care. He's going right back. If I have to stuff him into a hog's head and take him back, he's going back, whatever that means. So he's rubbing some water on his face and then he gets some soap. You know, he's all shirtless and sexy. You know, he takes some water and wets his beard. You know, he's got a little scruff going on, you know. And then he takes the soap and lathers up his face. And then Claire gets up, you know, from her little perch on the bed and says, don't shave your beard. And Jamie's like, why not? He says, I've got 4 days, days growth since we left Kingston. You know, and she's looking at him, you know, observing him, you know, like women do. And she's like, you got a few more white hairs here. He says, yeah, well, it's funny. I don't have a full head of gray hair after all the stuff I've been through these last few months. And she says, it feels different against my skin, you know, and she's holding her mouth real close to his, and then she kisses him, and he goes, oh, yeah, well, you got a lot of really fine skin, Sasnik, like pearl, you know. So anyway, long story short, we're not going to go through every detail of this scene. This is a very intimate scene. They're being very sexy, very flirty. Jamie is describing to Claire, or he says he's given a lot of thought about what he wants to do to her when they get to dry land again, where they have enough room to move around and no one's listening and they can just do what they want to do. You know, so they end up on the little hearth or the bed, whatever it is. And Jamie's squeezing her ass and they rolling around. And, you know, I guess eventually end up screwing. So it was a great scene. It was a nice, passionate, I thought it was a very lengthy scene, but I think it was needed to kind of reestablish Claire and Jamie as Claire and Jamie. Claire and Jamie, regardless if they're 20-something or 40-something, it's all going to always come back. Whether they just rescue their nephew from a murdering crazy woman who was about to sacrifice him and then go kill their daughter, you know, whether they seen a man get his neck broken and then stabbed by a bunch of runaway slaves, whether they, no matter what they've been through, okay, it'll always come back to this, to them and their closeness and their inability to keep their hands off each other, because that's what it's all about, Claire and Jamie and their relationship. And we all love watching. So after Claire and Jamie get busy, and then as they're lying in each other's arms in post-coital sedation, you know, Jamie kind of wakes up and they're lying near a window. And Jamie's like, oh, it'll be so nice to be in cool air again after the heat of the island. You know, and Claire kind of, you know. Claire's like, I don't feel like talking right now. I just had some real good sex. So, you know, I'm going to save my energy if you don't mind. Anyway, Jamie looks out the window and he says, it looks like the skies are turning. And in the very next scene, there is a full-on storm going on. All hands are on deck. They're trying to, Jamie is helping this one guy hold on to the steering wheel. It's pouring rain. And the ship is rocking and rolling. The ocean is really angry. It's, you know, big waves and the ship is just all over the place. And they're trying to hold on and, you know, make sure that they, I guess, stay on course. So below deck, Claire is down there explaining to Jamie's crew and Ian and Marcelly and Fergus. They're all down there. And she's like, you guys have to stay down here. The experienced sailors are on deck doing what they have to do. So y'all stay down here, because I think the people down there, especially Ian, young Ian, were like, we should be up there helping. And she's like, no, you stay down here. You know, the experienced sailors are going to take care of everything. And then she gets ready to leave. And Ian is like, where are you going? And she's like, I'm still the ship's surgeon. And I remember thinking, what that got to do with anything? You can't do anything as a surgeon during the middle of the storm. I mean, like, if someone is injured, what you going to do? Be on deck trying to patch it up? That's not practical. I didn't get why she felt she needed to go above deck now of all times just because she's the surgeon. So what? I mean, if someone is injured and they manage to get dragged below, that's where you would take care of them, below, where it is safer, drier, and more reasonable for you to try to assist them. But on deck in the middle of the storm, what is the point of that? I did not get that. That made no sense to me. But anyway, of course, Claire's ass is hard-headed, so she went on deck. She's getting all in the way. Jamie sees her. He's like, wait a minute, what is she doing up here? He lets go of the wheel, what he's trying to hold on to with his other guy. And he says, you got to get below deck. It's too dangerous. She's like, I'm needed. I'm the surgeon. He's like, go back below deck. What are you talking about?
So then, you know, the guy with the wheel, he's like, I can't hold it by myself, man. So Jamie has to go back over there and help him hold the wheel. Some guy, one of the sailors, slips and falls, and I think he breaks his leg. And some of the other men try to come over, help him. Claire tries to help. She says, I think his leg is broken. Let's get him below deck. They're trying to get him below deck. I think they managed to get him below. But Claire stays her ass above deck. Why doesn't she go below deck with the man with the broken leg? She's the surgeon. Shouldn't she be down there patching this motherfucker up? But no, she stays on deck, goes back over trying to go towards Jamie. I'm like, what is she doing? So then the mainsail, the mast breaks. The sail topples over. At this point, there's no point in trying to steer. It's just gone. Like the man said, it's gone broadside. We all just need to get below now and just hold on. Secure the wheel. Let's get below. So Jamie, you know, puts a rope on the wheel to secure it. They all try to get below. Claire's ass is still waddling back and forth on the deck. Jamie's like, let me go get my wife. So he goes over there to get Claire's crazy ass. And as he reaches her, they look up and all of a sudden there's this huge wave that is coming at them. So they look at each other right before this huge wave comes crashing down onto the boat, knocking Claire overboard. So when the water recedes, Jamie looks around. He's on the deck and Claire is gone. She is gone. And that's where we come back to the scene like we had at the beginning with Claire underwater, floating underwater, lower. We get her narration of her feeling like she's dead, but she has no more fear, no rage, all of that stuff. So then we see a figure floating towards her or swimming towards her. Jamie is once again to the rescue, swimming underwater to get to Claire. He reaches her. He takes out his knife. He cuts the ropes that are wrapped around her away because she was, I think, being dragged down by the rope that was attached to her, and it was attached to a large piece of wood. And he cuts it loose and brings her to the surface. He puts his mouth to hers right before that, though. I don't know if it was a kiss or if that was his strange way of giving her air. I don't know. If it was a kiss, that would make it much weirder. But maybe it was just mouth to mouth. But what would he know about that? I don't know. But anyway, and plus they were underwater. So maybe he was trying to give her a breath. I don't know. Anyway, they swim back to the surface, or he pulls her to the surface, where he puts her onto this large piece of wood. It's kind of like Titanic. It wasn't a door. It was just a piece of wreckage, a piece of wood. And he puts her on there, but she's unconscious. And he looks at her and he says, Claire, if you die on me out here, I'll kill you. That's a line straight from the book, by the way. But then he looks at her. She's not responding. And he starts to cry. He puts his head down. It's very, very sad moment because he doesn't know. We don't know. Is Claire okay? You know? And then this camera pans out all the way up to the sky, and they are on this piece of wood, just the two of them, floating in the middle of the ocean, and the camera pans up higher and higher, and the Artemis is nowhere around. They are in the middle of the ocean with nothing else out there, just the two of them floating on this piece of wood. And it goes up, up, up into the clouds and sky, and it's a very dramatic and very beautiful shot. You know, another noteworthy point to make about this shot of them being underwater was that Claire's hair was billowing out all around her, so long and beautiful. It looked like it was much longer than it usually is. Like, I don't know if it's the effect of the water that makes it look that way, but it looked like her hair was just like 18 inches long, just billowing all out around her. But, you know, when she's on land, it's like just a little past her shoulders. But anyway. And also with Jamie, his hair was also loose, finally out of that horrid ponytail and billowing all out around him. It wasn't long, long like Claire's, but it was long, longer than what you're used to seeing. And it was loose, billowing out all around him as he's cutting Claire free from the ropes. But then when they get back up to the surface, you notice that it's back in the ponytail again. Like, okay, that was a little bit of rough editing there, a little, you know, they kind of, you know, messed that up, you know, have his hair loose, guys. His hair was loose underwater, so can't be back in the pigtail when he goes back up, you know, to the surface. So that was a bit of an editing faux pas, but, you know, no big deal, happens, you know. So anyway, in the very next scene, the last scene of the show, we show a like a white cloth, you know, flapping in the wind. And at first we're confused. What is this? Is it the sail again? But no, it is a little girl's dress. And we see this little girl is playing by the edge of the shore, a seashore. You know, she's kind of walking along, you know, playing. And then she runs a little ways down the shore, and then she starts poking at something with a stick. The camera lowers, and we show that it's Jamie. He's washed up on the shore, little girl poking him. He starts to move. She runs off, and he wakes up, you know, covered with sand. He's washed ashore. His hair is loose again, thank goodness, you know. It looks good. He looks good for some reason. After having, Lord knows, been floating out in the ocean for God knows how long, his skin looks awesome. He looks great. His hair looks very bright and brilliant, even though it's wet and caked with sand and water. He still looks good. You know, you can't help but notice that. So he kind of crawls forward because he sees something, and he crawls until he gets to it. It turns out that it's Claire. She has washed up on the shore a little ways away from him, but she is unconscious, and he has this look on his face like he's afraid. He moves her hair aside, and her eyes are closed, and he calls her really softly, Claire. You know, you could tell he's thinking she's dead. He looks like he's crying or getting ready to cry. He kisses her cheek, and then she starts to cough. So he's like, oh, thank God. I thought you were dead. And then she looks up at him after, you know, coughing up some water. She says, I told you I would never leave you. So then they kind of look off and see these two people, a man and a woman, approaching them up the beach a ways. So they come towards them, and the man says, are you okay? And Jamie says, well, we have all our limbs, so I guess we're okay. And the man says, you must be from the ship that ran aground about 4 miles from here. So this is when we realize that the Artemis has made it, or at least has run aground. And Jamie says, were there any survivors? And the man says, yes, our people are attending to them now. And the woman says, it's a miracle that you guys were spared. We don't usually get storms this bad this time of year. And then the man says, I'm Joseph Oliver, and this is my wife and my daughter. And Jamie says, my name is James Fraser, and this is my wife, Claire. And he gives her a nice loving look. Claire's just out of it. She's just like, you know. And then Jamie looks at the couple and the little girl, and he says, this might sound strange, but where are we? The woman says, we call it Le Pearl. And Claire says, but what island is it? And the man says, well, this is not an island. This is the mainland on the colony of Georgia. And Jamie says, Georgia?
And Claire looks at him and she says, America. And they look at each other and then they hug. And the music starts to build.
And the little family that had found them decides to give them some privacy. They walk off.
And they're hugging, sitting there on the beach. The orchestra music builds to a crescendo. The camera does this weird zooming thing down the beach, zooming across the beach, and then past Claire and Jamie over into the mainland where it starts to get green and grassy and over the hills. And we're looking at the American green shores. We're no longer in Scotland, folks. We're no longer in Europe. We are now in the Americas. And this is where Outlander will now begin its new journey. And that was the end of the episode, and it was awesome. Like I said in the beginning, I did have a couple of things that I was a little bit not that impressed with, meaning that I thought that some of the scenes early on in the first half, because the first half was you know, rescuing Ian. Then the second half of course was the ship and the voyage and the storm and falling overboard and all that shit and the shipwrecking. But the first half, though, I thought it was rushed because not a whole lot happens after, you know, the whole Galeas thing. The only thing that happens after they leave Jamaica was that they get on the Artemis. They have this long ass scene with Claire and Jamie fooling around. And then there's a storm. And then they're overboard. And then they wash ashore on the island or the mainland of the Americas in Georgia. So I just thought that maybe that love scene could have been shortened just a little bit. Because even though I liked it, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it. I like seeing Jamie and Claire be Jamie and Claire. I just thought that it took up so much time to get that scene done that they could have maybe extended a couple of the more important scenes earlier on. Like, I thought it just felt rushed. I'm trying to see what could have been extended or what I needed more of. I don't know. I felt like the whole thing with them, you know, going to the tribal dance and all that stuff, not tribal dance, but the ritualistic ceremony, whatever that was, the slaves were doing. I thought all of that, putting all that together where Claire overhears Archibald talking about the 200-year-old baby and them going through the jungle to find the cave and then finding, I thought all of that was just coming together so fast. It was just so much packed into such a short period of time that it felt a little rushed. I think I felt the rushed part, though, a little bit more on the first view than I did on the second and subsequent views. It just initially just felt like more should be here. The whole thing with Yi Tin Cho and Margaret Campbell, I don't think we got enough backstory there for how they reconnected. I would have liked to have seen how they ended up getting away and going to, what did he say, Martinique or whatever it was. I would have liked to have seen maybe them leave to go and start their lives together. We don't even know what happened to Margaret and Yi Ting Cho. I guess we can only assume that maybe they did get away. I mean, Archibald's gone, so no reason for them to not have been able to get away. So I guess we just assume that they did. Other than me feeling like parts of the first part of this show were rushed and, you know, I liked it. There were definitely a lot of changes from the book. The whole thing with Yi Tin Cho getting to live happily ever after with the woman of his dreams, is certainly a definite change from what happens in the book. The whole thing with Archibald in the book, now that the show is over, I know that they're not going to do anything with this part of the book anymore. So I guess I can tell you now, if you don't want to hear it, if you still intend to read Voyager, then this is where you want to cut it off. But I'm going to get into it now. In the book, Archibald was a religious man. As a matter of fact, I think he was a priest or a minister of some kind. And he was also a serial killer. He was killing people. He was killing hookers, whores, prostitutes. He had killed someone that was from the brothel that Claire was staying in, that Jamie was staying in. He'd killed one of those women. Matter of fact, that woman was supposed to be the one that was supposed to see to it that Claire got her food that morning. And that's why Claire ended up going downstairs to eat on her own, because the person that was expected to do that was supposed to have, you know, brought Claire her breakfast. But in the book, the reason why she wasn't able to do that is because she didn't show up for work. And she didn't show up for work because she was murdered by the fiend, is what they were calling him. He had done it so often that he had given a name, like he had been given a name, like Jack the Ripper. No one knew who he was. He was just killing women, women of the evening. And he was known as the fiend. And no one could figure out who he was. We didn't find out in the book who he was until Mr. Willoughby told on him. Yi-Ting Cho, excuse me, had told on him. And Yi-Ting Cho didn't tell on him until Yi-Ting Cho escaped. Like I told you last week, I believe I mentioned that Yi-Ting Cho had been accused of murdering a guest from the party, a woman who had rebuffed his advances at the party. Turns out that's not exactly what happened. Turns out it was this man who had killed this woman. Maybe because she was flirting with with Yi-Ting Cho, and he felt like, how can she, you know, flirt with this heathenous Chinaman? So when he caught her alone, he killed her. And Yi-Ting Cho got the blame because, well, he's a Chinaman and they knew that he had been talking to her. So they felt like he did it. But he ran away, so they couldn't arrest him. And in the book, he was missing for quite a while. They couldn't find him. He didn't turn up again until Jamie and Claire confronted Galus in the cave. Wait a minute. I'm trying to remember how this went down. Archibald was in the cave for some reason. I think he was in there. Oh, yeah. I think he was in there attacking or getting ready to attack Claire. I can't remember why he was going to attack her. I think he found her in the cave because she was down there, I think, at first. Wait a minute. What happened? Did he hit Jamie in the head and knock Jamie out? And is that why Jamie wasn't there to help Claire? And he was going to attack Claire, Archibald. But Yi-Ting Cho shows up, apparently having observed them going into the cave, because he had been in hiding this whole time, ever since the party. And when Archibald gets ready to attack Claire, Yi-Ting Cho shows up. And Yi-Ting Cho kills him in the show and also kills him in the book. It's just that how he did it was a different manner. I don't think, did he twist his neck in the book or what? Did he stab him or shoot? I don't remember. I don't remember how he killed him in the book. But he did it in the book after stopping him from attacking Claire. And they were in the cave and Yi-Ting Cho tells Claire and the Reverend or at, not the Reverend, but the Archibald, that he saw him kill the women. Yi Ting Cho says he saw him in the brothel, saw him being with women, even though he was supposed to be a reverend, and saw him kill the women. And at first, Archibald was denying it, saying this heathen doesn't know what he's talking about. And Yi Ting Cho says, yeah, you killed the woman at the party. And yeah, you're a murderer, you know. So Yi Ting Cho, you know, takes him out. I can't remember how he does it, like I said, but he does. And then he leaves. And Yi Ting Cho, before he leaves, tells Claire essentially that, you know, he's leaving and he's going to go somewhere, and he's going off he's going off somewhere to live. And he's leaving Jamie's employee, and he's leaving all of y'all behind. And he spits on the name Mr. Willoughby. He said, Willoughby, name not Willoughby. My name is Yi Ting Cho. He said, Willoughby, it's the name Jamie gave me. You know, and he essentially tells Claire that he did not want to be Mr. Willoughby. He was Yi Ting Cho. You know, reclaiming his name, essentially, and saying that he's now finna go live his own life elsewhere and fuck y'all. Essentially is what he said to Claire. And he also revealed that he was the person that turned Jamie in, I think, to Captain Leonard or whoever it was in the ship. Because the people in the book were after Jamie only after Jamie was reported as being the same person as A. Malcolm from Edinburgh. And no one could figure out who had done it. Turns out it was in the book Mr. Willoughby who had done it. And Claire asked Mr. Willoughby, and I'm calling him Mr. Willoughby because that's how most people referred to him in the book. Claire asked him, why did he do it? And Yi Ting Cho basically said that he felt like Jamie was a ghost that was eating his soul, calling him Mr. Willoughby, you know, renaming him and stuff. And now he feels like he's the ghost after having his identity kind of taken away from him. He was this regal person. Well, not regal so much, but at least an important person where he came from. And now here in Scotland, he's nothing. He's Willoughby, renamed by this devil, this white demon, you know, Jamie, you know. And he had no love and no respect and no fondness for Jamie at all. He just felt like he was indebted to him because he had saved his life. And now he's free because he saved Claire's life. And so now he feels like his debt is paid. He's out of there now. He's out of Jamie's service, no longer indebted to him. And he's gone now. So that's what happens in the book. Much darker relationship between Jamie and Yi Ting Cho in the book than it was in the show. So yeah, I prefer the book version, not the book version, but the show version, because I appreciate them giving Yi Ting Cho respect from the beginning, than having Yi Ting Cho being disrespected throughout most of the book and having to do bad things just to get some dignity back. Yeah, I prefer the show version, more palatable. Although the book version is probably more realistic. I mean, that's just real. The book version is probably more of what something like that, how it really probably would have gone down in the 18th century. A Chinaman would have probably been disrespected, even by people who think of themselves as good, even by the good guys. He would have been treated like he was nothing by them too, because that's just how it was. And as unpalatable as it is, it was life back then. And unfortunately still is in some people's heads. So anyway, guys, that is it. Outlander is over. Season 3 is in the can. And now what do we do? What do I do? I guess is the question, right? Do I continue on with this show and start doing recaps of the older episodes, or do I just see you guys next year? I don't know. You know what I'm going to do? This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to play it by ear. I will be back next week with a recap of episode 2 of season 1 of Outlander, entitled, let's go back, because I forgot what it was called. I have to remind myself by going back and looking at it, because I can't remember. I know the first episode was Sassenach. The second episode of season 1 is Castle Leok. I love the first season of Outlander. I really do. So it'll be fun to go back and recap Castle Leok. To rewatch it, first of all, would be cool, because I haven't seen it in a while. So I will do a rewatch of Outlander season 1, episode 2, Castle Leok. And I will release that episode, that recap episode. It probably won't be a lengthy one like these new shows, because I know my recap of Sassenach was, what, like 30-something minutes? So I'm going to try to keep these older recaps to about 30-40 minutes, or you know, around there about. And I'm gonna start pushing them out starting next Sunday. Next Sunday, December the 18th or 17th rather, will be my first or second review of season 1 Outlander. And I'm trying to think of what I should call it. The recap of, I don't know. We'll think of that later. But yeah, it'll just be a review of the older episodes, guys. So until then, it's been real. I loved recapping season 3. It's been great. I'm going to miss Outlander. Hopefully Droughtlander is not too long. And if you guys want to kind of get through Droughtlander with the rest of us, come back. Come back and listen again to me recap the older episodes of Outlander. And once I'm done with that, I'll just be done until the new season starts. But until then, I will catch you guys later. Have a great week. I hope you all have been enjoying these recaps as much as I have been enjoying doing them. And hopefully you'll enjoy the older episode recaps as well. And like I said, when I play it by ear and see if anybody is really listening to the older episode recaps, I'll keep going. If you're not, if I notice that my audience has dropped significantly, then I'll probably end up kind of leaving it alone. So you guys will know by whether or not I keep doing it, whether or not anybody's listening. And if not, you know, then you'll see that I won't be doing it anymore after that. All right, guys, you take care. Have a good week, and see you next Sunday. Bye-bye.